This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. When a tiger at the Bronx Zoo tested positive for COVID-19, it sent shivers through animal lovers all over the United States. We were curious how the well-known residents of Michigan zoos are holding up in the pandemic, to say nothing of the human systems that keep the zoos running. Ron Kagan is the CEO of the Detroit Zoological Society, and he joins us now. Ron, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. Good morning.
Have there been any concerns about illnesses in big cats at the Detroit Zoo or really any other animals?
Well, until the situation happened in New York, we were not aware that there was a risk to cats. We always assume that anything that humans have potentially could be passed on to great apes. So, like every other accredited zoo, we always take special precautions when caring for primates. But this was new to us, new to the Bronx Zoo, and I think new to the scientific community.
Well, wait a minute. What is that? I'm trying to imagine what the precautions look like. I mean, you can't have chimpanzees using hand sanitizer. Can you?
No, but you can have the staff using that. So normally what we are concerned with is the phenomenon of zoonotic disease transmission. So, you know, in lay terms, that just means that there are certain diseases, bacteria, viruses, etc., that can be transmitted from non-human animals to humans, from animals to humans. And in this case, we're now learning that there is the potential for reverse zoonosis. The transmission from humans to animals.
So what have you learned about that?
Well, we've known, I mean, I think people may not understand that coronaviruses are actually quite common in the environment, and they affect many species. They affect humans, they affect many, many species of animals, and of course there's a lot we don't know, so there's probably a lot more that are affected that we aren't aware of. But even the common cold is generated by a type of human coronavirus. They often do affect upper respiratory systems. Sometimes intestinal situations are problematic too. But this has not been... This is called a novel coronavirus for a reason. This is new, this particular strain of coronavirus. And so clearly what we've seen in New York, well, I shouldn't say clearly, but it seems overwhelming in terms of the evidence that this was a human being who had COVID-19, who was working with the big cats there, and apparently they have developed it. Now, the big cats don't appear, although it's a small sample size, don't appear to get sick exactly in the same way that humans do, although it is affecting their upper respiratory system.
Hmm. To your knowledge, are the animals at the Detroit Zoo healthy right now?
As far as we know, they're healthy, and so is the staff. And we obviously, just like New York, we take lots of precautions. So one of the ways to make sure they stay safe, you asked about the chimps washing their hands. Well, We do that, and we also wear PPE. So people are wearing masks and gloves, and you know there are all sorts of protocols, both in terms of keeping people away from each other, the staff here, and also keeping a distance from the animals and making sure that everything that the animals have access to is clean.
Sure. There's been so much discussion around essential workers in hospitals and grocery stores and delivery services. I think the public tends to regard the zoo as something fun and leisurely. But what does work look like these days at the zoo?
Well, you're right. The zoo is fun and leisurely, but it's also it's such an interesting blend of activities for one organization to do, because we're just like a healthcare system. In a healthcare system, you've got doctors and nurses and obviously patients that require care 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. For a zoo, we have the same thing. We have here 2,500 animals. The difference, of course, here is that we don't have to just deal with one species. We have hundreds of different species. So the complexity of that the technical complexity of it is enormous, and there's nowhere nearly as much knowledge as there is with human healthcare. So we're operating like a healthcare system. We're also a major tourism venue, again, as is the case with any other major accredited zoo. So we have to operate for that. We're also an education system, and we're serving over 100,000 students in various educational programs, aside from all the informal education. So there are a lot of different businesses going on simultaneously, and they have to work together. When the zoo is closed, it doesn't mean that we've stopped operations, because we can't. We can't just close down and warehouse animals. So all of the fundamentals of animal care are still very much in play, and so half our staff are absolutely essential. All of our staff's amazing, but half of them we just can't safely do anything without having those people here.
Right. The zoo is funded in part through donations and part through public money that I believe comes in terms of a millage, correct?
Right, right.
How much of your annual budget is based on ticket sales? I've got to believe the shutdown is having an effect on the financial model for the zoo.
No, it's a huge problem for us. The regional millage provides somewhere between 25% and 30% of our funding. The rest is all from admissions and parking, memberships, sponsorships, all sorts of things which are tied into us being open to the public. So for us, I'd say every month right now, we're losing somewhere between $2 and $3 million of revenue. So this is a massive hit to us. I know it's the same pretty much for any enterprise. But we don't know how long that is going to last, obviously, and it's a big problem.
What do you think you're going to have to do about the financial loss?
Well, we've already taken a few steps, which every step you take is more pain. We laid off about half of our staff. We're hoping to bring back most people whenever this situation resolves and however it resolves. We've also cut back on all the other expenditures that we can. I mean, we can't cut back on food. We can't cut back on water and, you know, various other basics. So we're doing what we can to operate safely, but it's extremely challenging. And obviously, we've been retraining everybody, because all of us who are still here are now having to do multiple jobs, and there's a big focus on emergency preparedness, which we normally do, but we're doing even more of it now. So it's challenging, but again, it's challenging for everyone in society.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Detroit Zoological Society CEO Ron Kagan about the possibility of viral transmission of COVID-19 between humans and animals. And we're discussing conservation efforts amid the global pandemic. There's no question that the pandemic has disrupted life as most of us know it. And you've been on the show speaking to us previously about global solutions for climate change. Could you foresee this disruption changing the direction of our conversation on the kind of scale that you and others believe is might be necessary?
Oh, what a great question. I really hope that's one of the good outcomes, and realizing that doesn't look like there are going to be many good outcomes of this, but this raises the issue of whether as a society, whether we are going to attempt to be prepared for the future and to some extent intentionally shape our future, as opposed to being victims of our own activities with no real proper regard for the future. And that, I think, could play out in a lot of different ways. So, for instance, one of them could be on the climate change issue. Certainly on our relationship with animals. So the the start of all of this coronavirus issue is, as far as we know, what are called wet markets in Asia, but they're wet markets in many other places around the world, where there are lots and lots of wild animals that are in a marketplace for sale, for primarily for food.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we need to get to a point where we have a very different relationship with nature. And again, that's going to hopefully influence how we deal with climate change and thinking beyond the next few weeks or few months and really think about what's going to happen. Because from my perspective, what we see for COVID-19 pales in comparison to what life will be like if sea levels, and it's not just about sea levels, but if sea levels go up 20 feet, 40 feet, 60 feet, I mean, you know, hundreds and hundreds of millions of people will either be killed or will be incredibly devastated by it. And that's all right now what is going to happen unless we completely change things.
Are there conversations happening among conservationists about how to organize coming out of this? I know everyone is sort of in survival mode at the moment.
No, actually, you're right. It is being discussed very actively. I give lots of credit to organizations like the Humane Society, HSUS and Humane Society International. They've been working on these issues for a long time. I think the U.S. Zoo and Aquarium community, there's a lot of dialogue that's going on among our colleagues right now of how to make sure that we're able to effectively communicate these issues. There are lots and lots of ways that we hope ultimately people do view us, as you described, as, you know, fun and enjoyable experiences, but we also do a lot of serious work. We're trying to, you know, have an impact in terms of conservation. We're trying to have an impact in terms of public policy. And we need, hopefully people will now pay a lot more attention to these issues.
I'm seeing all kinds of photos popping up on folks' social media feeds of wildlife strolling casually through spaces where we're not used to seeing them. Deer and coyotes, turkeys sometimes. Should this be a surprise that when humans stay home, animals are getting out and about?
Well, I think it's kind of obvious that they were here first. So, you know, this really was their environment before we arrived. And I think it's wonderful. I think it's, you know, you also see a lot of environmental improvements too. You've seen clean air over lots of cities, and because, you know, factories have shut down and people aren't driving. And so there's a lot of really interesting stuff happening. You know, for all of us, really, we've just got to pay a lot more attention to the impact that we have and make sure that what we're doing is a positive, not a negative. It would be wonderful to have wildlife around on a regular basis, not simply when places are deserted.
We've spent so much time talking about getting outside and that people can reconnect with nature as one way to spend this time alone. A lot of your life is interacting with nature in some form. I know that you're responsible for an awful lot of people and animals right now. I don't know if you have a lot of spare time, but What does connecting with nature look like for you right now?
Well, so again, I think you've raised a wonderful point, because everyone right now is really scared, and the reality is that nature is our friend. E.O. Wilson, who's a famous biologist at Harvard, coined the term many years ago of biophilia, which is the innate human love of nature. And of course, there are exceptions. There are some people who really just don't like nature, but the vast majority of us, we can't help ourselves. Why do so many people have dogs and cats? You know, we absolutely love animals. So that's a good thing. And it is wonderfully therapeutic. In fact, a few hours after the tragedy of 9/11, our zoo, and I think many others around the country, our zoo was filled with people. People know that nature is healing and that nature is kind of our balance. So we want to encourage that. We want people to remember how much they love nature. I am very, very fortunate because I am surrounded by it. And when I need a little bit of nourishment, I go up to our butterfly garden and, you know, feel like I'm in the Garden of Eden without the snake. And I'll go visit our donkeys and we'll chat or sing, depending on the day. You know, it's awesome. I mean, I really can't think of anything that's more wonderful and healthier. And I think also your point just about fresh air, this got really lost to some extent. We are by far healthier if we are outdoors. Now, obviously not in a blizzard, but sunshine and fresh air are enormously healthy for us. And there's plenty of evidence to suggest that UV light kills most organisms like viruses and bacteria. So being outside, especially if it's sunny, is a really good thing for people to do. Obviously respecting social distancing, but what I think everyone understands is that we don't want to become socially isolated. We just need to distance ourselves, and we don't want to be isolated from nature either.
Mr. Kagan, thank you very much for your work and for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Ron Kagan, CEO of the Detroit Zoological Society.